that you will have a great week.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Emergency services were still searching the sea and coastline in Cutro, Italy, amid stormy weather on Sunday following a deadly migrant shipwreck. The death toll has risen to 59, including 12 children, an official said on Sunday. The number of dead is set to rise further, she added. She said survivors had said some 140 to 150 people were on board, suggesting some migrants were still missing. The vessel carrying people from Afghanistan, Iran, and several other countries sank in rough sea conditions near the region that forms the tip of Italy's boot. Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian homes late on Sunday near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus after a Palestinian gunman killed two Israeli brothers as they were driving. One Palestinian was killed during attacks by the settlers on houses and cars, according to Palestinian officials. Video obtained by Reuters showed settlers blocking a street, lighting fires, and throwing stones towards Palestinian homes. The coronavirus pandemic likely arose from a Chinese laboratory leak, the U.S. Department of Energy now says, according to media, although the White House maintained Sunday that American intelligence remains divided on the issue. The determination, noted in a classified report by Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines' office, the Wall Street Journal reported, marks a shift by the Energy Department, which had previously said it was undecided on how the virus emerged. The conclusion, reportedly the result of new intelligence, is nevertheless significant because the department oversees a network of national laboratories, including some that do advanced biological research. This is VOA News. Nigeria's Election Commission has announced the first results from the country's closely watched presidential election, but it could be days before a winner is declared. Results from 35 other states and capital city Abuja were still pending after logistical problems and security concerns caused voting delays. People across the country continued casting ballots Sunday, even though the general election, which included choosing a new national legislature, had been scheduled to end Saturday. Saudi Arabia reiterated its support for Ukraine during a visit by the country's foreign minister in Kyiv on Sunday. He met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who thanked Saudi Arabia for the cooperation and provided aid.
And I'm happy that today we host your country, and really it's very important for us. That is, as far as I know, first time during the Saudi years. More than 30 years of our independence.
Ukraine and Saudi Arabia began diplomatic relations in 1993. Some U.S. lawmakers are pushing President Joe Biden's administration to supply Ukraine with fighter jets. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Not everyone in Congress supports more military aid for Ukraine, but Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan says they need F-16 fighter jets, and the Biden administration should do it now.
They have slow-rolled critical military weapons systems.
He spoke on NBC's Meet the Press. So did White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, defending the stance on the fighter jets.
This phase is about ground combat and being able to have the tools in the hands of the Ukrainians.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
CIA Director William Burns says Russian President Vladimir Putin is being too confident in his military's ability to grind Ukraine into submission. Burns tells CBS's Face the Nation Putin was underestimating U.S. resolve to support Ukraine. Burns said it's been his experience that the Russian leader's view is that Americans have attention deficit disorder and, quote, will move on to some other issue eventually. Meanwhile, some lawmakers from the Republican Party are criticizing U.S. President Joe Biden's administration for not sending F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, and there are concerns that China might help arm Russia. Find more on these stories and the podcast Flashpoint Ukraine and Flashpoint Iran on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Today is Monday, February 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Nigeria's electoral body announces the results from one out of 36 states amid security and logistical concerns.
It's been that of mixed emotion. Mixed emotion in the sense that so many people, so many voters are not happy with what happened, events that took place. Others in the areas they voted, it was all peaceful.
Dozens of migrants die in a shipwreck off southern Italian coast.
Emergency services say it happened near a seaside resort area in the Calabria region in southern Italy. At least 80 people survived. It's believed that about 120 were aboard the boat when it ran aground.
And scores of Israeli settlers go on a rampage after two settlers were killed by a Palestinian gunman. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said on Sunday that China has not moved forward providing lethal and aid to help Russia in its invasion of Ukraine. However, Beijing has not taken the option off the table, Sullivan said in an interview on ABC's, quote, The Week, unquote, program. U.S. officials are sending the message that providing such an aid will be, quote, a real mistake, unquote. The United States and its NATO allies in recent days have been scrambling to dissuade China from such a move, making public comments on their behalf that China is considering providing lethal equipment to Russia. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken on Friday said China has been providing non-lethal assistance to Russia through its companies. Nigeria's Electoral Commission has announced the first results from the country's closely watched presidential election, but it could be days before a winner is declared. The commission reported Sunday night that the ruling All Progressives Congress Party's candidate Bola Tinubu secured the most votes in southwest Ekiti State. Results from 35 other states and capital city Abuja were still pending after logistical problems and security concerns caused voting delays. There were scattered violent incidents on Saturday, though not on the large scale seen in previous elections in the country of over 200 million people. Local newspapers report pressure is building on the Electoral Commission to announce all the results. For the mood in the rest of Niger Delta region, I spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye.
It's been that of mixed emotion. Mixed emotion in the sense that so many people, so many voters are not happy with what happened, events that took place. Others in the areas they voted, it was all peaceful, smooth, and easygoing. One, the malfunctioning of the BVAS machine, the machine that was used to accredit voters and to vote. In some areas, it worked very well. In other areas, it was slow in starting. But the crux of the matter, why people are not happy, is that after voting, the same device will be used to transfer or move the results, upload the results to the INEC server in Abuja. So in some areas, and in so many areas, the machine failed to upload the results at the crucial time it ought to have done that. So lots and lots of people, lots of voters, were not happy with the delay, and they suspected that it was deliberate on the part of INEC officials in the polling units to, as they allege, manipulate and change the figures to suit some parts. How true this is, we don't know. But so many voters were not happy with this particular development. So it was a tense situation in those areas.
Now, these fears or allegations by some voters that there was a deliberate manipulation of the machines, these reports are not coming in from Port Harcourt or the Niger Delta alone. In some other parts of Nigeria, there are similar reports, and this is, according to local reports, building up. People are upset, and there's this fear that if this is not taken care of as quickly as possible, it might get worse. And there are reports that in Yenagoa, that some youths are already on the street going to INEC facilities demanding that the results be transmitted or that the results be released so they can know who won and also that their votes actually counted. What are you hearing?
Well, let me start with that of Yenagoa in Bayelsa State, also in the Niger Delta region of Nigeria. From the reports we got from there, in some areas in Yenagoa and in southern Ijo, the problem is that election materials were not received in time. So the voters became tense, they became agitated. They felt that How come these areas are accredited polling units, no election materials? So the tension that built up in those areas was as a result of late arrival of election materials. As we speak, elections were held today in some areas in Yenagoa on Sunday. So that built the tension in the area. And that must have made the youth to kind of protest.
That's reporter Mike Mbonye speaking with me from Port Harcourt. And dozens of migrants attempting to cross the Mediterranean into Europe were killed when their boat was wrecked off a seaside resort area in southern Italy, with about 120 people aboard, according to emergency services. The sea route is one of the world's most dangerous. Matthew Laratondo of Reuters reports.
At least 43 people have been killed in a major shipwreck off the Italian coast of migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea into Europe. Emergency services say it happened near a seaside resort area in the Calabria region in southern Italy. At least 80 people survived. It's believed that about 120 were aboard the boat when it ran aground. Hazardous conditions on the sea had been hampering search and rescue efforts. Local media reported that dozens of bodies were found washed ashore. Several children and a baby are reportedly among the dead. The boat is said to have been carrying migrants from Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. The Mediterranean crossing into Italy is one of the world's most dangerous migration routes. Italy's interior minister said it was, quote, essential to stop the sea crossings, which give an illusion of a better life in Europe, enrich human traffickers, and cause tragedies like this accident.
That's Matthew Laratondo of Reuters. There are fears of a new global nuclear arms race after Russia's president announced this week that he will suspend the country's participation in the New START treaty, which limits the number of warheads deployed by Russia and the United States. Henry Bridgewell reports.
The New START treaty is the last remaining nuclear agreement between the United States and Russia, signed in 2010 by then US President Barack Obama and his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev. This week, President Vladimir Putin announced he was suspending Russia's participation, saying the treaty was absurd at a time when NATO was helping Ukraine fight Russian forces. He said he had ordered Russia's ground-based nuclear weapons to combat readiness and pledged further investment. He said we will continue mass production of air-based hypersonic Kinzhal systems and will start mass supplies of sea-based Zircon hypersonic missiles. But analysts say Moscow's suspension of the nuclear treaty is unlikely to have an immediate impact. Ian Hurd is a professor of political science at Northwestern University.
It was going to expire anyway, so having the end of the treaty come is not going to change very much in the substance of military relations between the two.
Russia and the United States together hold over 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. The New START treaty limits both sides to 1,550 warheads and allows each side to inspect the other's nuclear sites. The inspections were put on hold 3 years ago due to the pandemic and have not resumed, which Washington blames on Moscow. Jane Kinnenmont is an analyst with the European Leadership Network.
It is in both countries' interests because it puts limits on the nuclear arms race. And ultimately, the US can outspend Russia if it wants to. It's a much bigger economy. It's not under sanctions. More likely, Russia wants to use this as a bargaining chip to say to the Biden administration, your support for Ukraine has costs.
US President Joe Biden called Russia's suspension of New START a grave error. The United Nations Secretary General called for Moscow to return to the deal. Despite warming ties between Beijing and Moscow, China Wednesday also called for Russia and the US to abide by the nuclear agreement. Wang Wenbin, a spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry, told reporters, "We hope the two sides will properly resolve their differences through constructive dialogue to ensure the smooth implementation of the treaty." There are fears of an arms race not only between Russia and the United States, but also among other nuclear powers, including China. Again, Jane Kinnenmont.
How can anyone make the case to China that they need to limit their program if the US and Russia have no limits on their own.
President Putin said, without citing evidence, that some in the US were considering restarting atomic tests, and if so, Russia would conduct its own. The United States, Russia, France, Britain and China stopped nuclear testing in the 1990s. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In other news, scores of Israeli settlers have gone on a violent rampage in the northern West Bank, setting cars and homes on fire after two settlers were killed by a Palestinian gunman. Palestinian officials say one man has been killed and four others were badly wounded. The deadly shooting, followed by the late-night rampage, is raising questions about a Jordanian declaration that it had received assurances from Israel and the Palestinians to calm a year-long wave of violence. The rampage occurred shortly after the Jordanian government, which hosted Sunday's talks at the Red Sea resort of Aqaba, said the sides had agreed to take steps to de-escalate tensions and would meet again next month ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Around the world, prominent women are leaving their jobs to pursue other interests and focus on other priorities. VOA's Laurel Borman has the story.
Some of the world's female leaders are quitting. In Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon recently announced her resignation as First Minister, citing the heavy personal toll of political life.
Since my very first moments in the job, I have believed that part of serving well would be to know, almost instinctively, when the time is right to make way for someone else.
Yes, her party has stumbled in its push for Scottish independence, but Sturgeon proudly stated that she wanted to spend more time with family.
That will help us to build a future.
In New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern stepped down in January as Prime Minister. While rising inflation had dented her party's popularity, Ardern cited the demands of motherhood as a top reason for leaving. In New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern stepped down in January as Prime Minister. While rising inflation had dented her party's popularity, Ardern cited the demands of motherhood as a top reason for leaving.
I know what this job takes, and I know that I no longer have enough in the tank to do it justice.
In the U.S. House of Representatives, politician Nancy Pelosi in November relinquished her role as the top House Democrat. And in Africa, head of the Ethiopian Supreme Court, Meza Ashanafi, resigned in January. Is this the great resignation of women leaders? Rangita De Silva De Alwis is an expert on the discrimination against women at Georgetown University's Institute for Women, Peace and Security.
And I think what we see in the great resignations of women leaders is that the ecosystem is not women friendly. I think it is important for us to look at these structures and systems and institutions that were historically created and defined by men, that they no longer are sustainable.
Meanwhile, research by LeanIn.org and McKinsey & Company suggests that women in business want better pay and more flexibility at work and are prepared to switch jobs to get it, and they are more likely to want to work from home, perhaps to care for family. Again, Rangita De Silva De Alwis.
I think it is getting more acceptable to be a caregiver in leadership.
And some research shows that the less gentle and more assertive a woman leader seems, the more unlikable she is perceived to be, even by other women. Former Malawi President Joyce Banda told the Guardian newspaper that her biggest critics tended to be women. But it's not all downhill for women in leadership. Experts say the trend in part-time work in Europe will help women, as well as quotas for female representation in business. And they say many cultures are more accustomed to having female leaders. Alice Evans studies women leaders and lectures at both Harvard and Yale universities.
In cultures where female leadership has long been institutionalized, such as in Scandinavia, then there is very high support for female leaders and Indeed, almost half their leadership is female.
Upon handing over the gavel, former Speaker of the U.S. House Pelosi marveled at how many more women are serving in the chamber than when she joined 35 years ago. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Laurel. And the South Korean court has ruled that a government health insurance provider must offer spousal coverage to a same-sex couple. It's a major victory for LGBT rights activists, but they say much progress is needed for the country to end rampant discrimination against members of the LGBT community. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, South Korea.
When a court delivered South Korea's biggest legal victory for marriage equality, Kim Yong-min was immediately aware of how much and how little the ruling meant. No one questioned the symbolic significance of the verdict, which found 32-year-old Kim must be allowed coverage as a dependent under his partner's national health insurance plan. It was the first time a South Korean court has ever recognized any right for same-sex couples. On the other hand, the victory was exceedingly limited. Kim tells VOA that Koreans have about 1,000 rights when they're married to someone of the opposite sex. He says he and his spouse managed to secure one of those rights. Winning that right required a 2-year legal battle for Kim and his husband. The couple held a wedding ceremony 2019. Like other same-sex marriages in South Korea, it was not legally recognized. A year later, apparently because of a clerical error, the couple was able to register Kim as a spouse in the National Health Care Plan. But after discovering the couple was gay, the NHIS withdrew the coverage. Seoul's High Court ordered Kim's coverage to be reinstated. It said there were no grounds for the government agency to treat same-sex unions differently from common-law marriages. Lena Yoon of Human Rights Watch says that is a major win for LGBT rights.
This is a very important case that upholds principles of equality and non-discrimination that has been applied to an LGBT couple. Now we have legal basis to demand more change.
But that's a big task, considering the rampant discrimination against and even criminalization of the LGBT community in South Korea. Under a provision of the Military Criminal Act, soldiers can be punished with up to 2 years in prison if they engage in same-sex activity. Activists have also pressured South Korea's National Assembly to pass a comprehensive anti-discrimination law that would provide protections for a wide range of marginalized groups. But such a law has failed to materialize. That has satisfied many evangelical Christian groups, which are a major force in South Korean politics. Chun Yun Sung works for a Seoul-based group of Christian legal scholars. Chun says the ruling is dangerous, extra legal, and arrogant. He says he hopes it's overturned by the Supreme Court. He also says it would be dangerous to conclude that there is social consensus within Korea on gay marriage. Polls suggest most South Koreans oppose the idea of same-sex marriage, but they also indicate broad support for anti-discrimination legislation. Yong Hae-in is a progressive lawmaker. She says a small number of fringe voices get a disproportionate amount of attention. But even if many Koreans oppose LGBT rights, she says lawmakers still have a responsibility to protect minorities. As for Kim and his husband, they will celebrate their legal victory in Australia, where they plan to attend the ongoing Sydney LGBT Festival. But the victory feels incomplete. He says the LGBT community cannot afford to fight so long for every individual right. Eventually, he says, same-sex marriage legislation needs to be passed. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
VOA Africa would like to hear from you. Send us a text message or a voice note on WhatsApp 24/7. Leave a comment, request, or send us a greeting, and you could be hearing your message on VOA Africa. Simply dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. We are always happy to hear from you. The number again is international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
1 year after Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine, it is important to remember that the United States consistently pursued two paths that Russia could choose from, noted Karen Donfried, Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs.
One was dialogue and diplomacy. The other would be Russian escalation and then resulting massive consequences. We and the Ukrainians made sincere efforts to pursue that former path of dialogue and diplomacy. And on February 24 of last year, Putin very unfortunately and tragically chose war.
Putin expected a quick victory, said Assistant Secretary Donfried, but he has consistently underestimated the resolve of the Ukrainian people and their desire and capability to defend their freedom and democracy. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is completely unjustified and illegal. The United States and its allies and partners have imposed sanctions, export controls, visa restrictions to target Putin, his war machine, and his enablers, with one purpose only: to stop this war and prevent Russia from doing this again to another neighbor, declared Assistant Secretary Donfried.
It's clear from his actions, President Putin has no interest in diplomacy. Russia's repeated bombardments have hit schools, hospitals, churches, apartment buildings, and critical infrastructure. Russia alone can end this war today. We echo Ukrainian President Zelensky's calls for a just and durable peace, one that recognizes Ukraine's sovereignty and independence.
The United States will continue to stand united with Ukraine and help it defend itself for as long as it takes. If Putin wins, it could make the world more dangerous and other countries more vulnerable to further Russian aggression. President Joe Biden believes the United States and its allies are stronger together. Since the first days of Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine, said Assistant Secretary Donfried, we have had continuous communication about what we can do together to hold Russia to account and impose consequences for its brutal war. Although we do not always share the same policy approaches, we share a commitment to upholding the international rules-based order that is founded on respect for territorial integrity and sovereignty.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.